So wisdom, yes. So I'm speaking about wisdom today. When we were praying this morning and I said I was speaking on the topic of wisdom, Ross said, oh, that must have been a very easy sermon for you to prepare because you're full of it. And which I thought was a bit rude. But he's not the first person to have told me I'm full of it. I'm sure he won't be the last. So I'm going to talk this morning, I'm going to talk about wisdom. I'm going to talk specifically about what wisdom is, why it's important, and how we can develop wisdom in our life. And the first question is, what is wisdom? Because I think there can be some confusion over what wisdom is. Wisdom is not the same as being clever or being educated or being sort of academic. But it's also not the same as what people might call common sense. You know, just knowing sort of what the right thing to do is. I would say actually wisdom is more uncommon sense because it's not particularly common. When we think about wisdom, we might think about King Solomon. This is a picture of King Solomon. If you were here at the beginning of the series when Stuart spoke on Ecclesiastes, he spoke about Solomon and how Solomon is the king. God came to him in a dream and said, you can have anything you want. And Solomon said, I want wisdom to govern and manage your people because there's so many of them and it's such a big responsibility. And then one of the stories that is associated with Solomon's wisdom is the story of the two women who came to Solomon and asked for his judgment. They were both claiming to be the mother of a child. One of their children had died and the other one had a living child. And they said, it's my child who's alive. And Solomon said, you know, cut the child in half and give half to each mother. And the mother whose child it really was said, no, no, don't do that. Let her have it rather than kill the child. And so Solomon was able to discern who the real mother was. Hopefully you may be familiar with that story. And that's the kind of thing that's associated with Solomon and his wisdom, this kind of ability to untangle tricky ethical situations and things like that. But that's not all there is to wisdom. That's not wisdom is about. The words in the Old Testament used to describe wisdom is hakam, which should be up there, hakam, wisdom. And here's just one example from the book of Exodus where that word is used. And I filled him with the Spirit of God with skill, ability, and knowledge in all kinds of crafts to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze. So the word wisdom here is applied to basically working with crafts. It's a skill in working with crafts. That's the word, that's wisdom. If you look at, go on from Solomon's story from 1 Kings 3 to the next chapter, 1 Kings 4, here are some of the things that Solomon did that is attributed to his wisdom. His administration, he reorganized the administration in Israel and how it was governed. He arranged trade deals and treaties with other nations, and we're even told he wrote books on plant life and things like that, understanding scientific principles. And this is all part of wisdom. In other words, wisdom is a very practical thing. It's the skill required to do something well. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs, specifically, wisdom is considered to be the skill required to live well. That's what wisdom is, the skill required to live well, just to live life productively and safely and in a fulfilling way. Over this Stories of Life series, we've been looking at a particular group of books from the Old Testament, and many of them, books like Job and Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, belong to a group known as wisdom literature. In the Old Testament, wisdom literature, because they are concerned with the issues of suffering and the meaning of life and all these things, that if you grasp them, you are able to live life well. And this is what wisdom is. This is what the book of Proverbs is about. Proverbs is a collection of sayings and thoughts and ideas gathered from, some of them are from Solomon, but they're not all from Solomon, sort of gathered together, a collection of wise sayings designed to help you know how to live well. That's what wisdom is. Generally, sort of, we might feel like people, like these cats here, people don't land on their feet. But sometimes you might meet someone and you look at them and you say, they always seem to land on their feet. They seem lucky. They seem to never have any problems. Everything's going well for them. And I think in some of those cases, I imagine if you look closely at that person's life, you'll see that their life is full of problems and trials and difficulties. But what has made the difference is somehow they seem to have the skill required to just manage those problems well, to just not let those things drag them down. And that is because they have wisdom. That's what wisdom is, the ability to manage life well. One of the best definitions, I think, of wisdom that I've come across, I found on the internet. You find all the best things on the internet. For a quote from Albert Einstein. Now, because it's from the internet, I did wonder, it seems like the sort of quote that maybe Albert Einstein said, but he might not have said it. So I'm not sure if it really was him, but that's sort of the website I found it on. That's kind of what it said. And as, you know, Abraham Lincoln said, 95% of internet quotes are wrongly attributed. So here we are. It's really good. I think this is an excellent definition. A clever person solves a problem. A wise person avoids it. A clever person solves a problem. A wise person avoids it. Do you understand there what Albert Einstein is saying? What he's saying wisdom is. It's the ability not to solve problems. It's the ability to avoid problems. And that's the difference. Some people are very clever and very sort of good at getting themselves out of problems they get themselves into. But that is not wisdom. Wisdom is seeing the problem coming and avoiding it. Wisdom is living in such a way as to avoid the problems that life throws at us, or avoid being swamped and broken by the problems that life throws at us. And if you look at the book of Proverbs, so many of the sections of Proverbs, the Proverbs themselves, are concerned purely with avoiding problems, keeping yourself from trouble. For example, I've put three up here, just randomly, well, not randomly, but pulled out from various points in the book. The first one is from a section about adultery, avoiding adultery, saying, basically, there is a consequence. Avoid it, because there is a consequence. There is a painful consequence to it. The Proverbs 14:7 says, stay away from foolish people. They have nothing to teach you. In other words, you can avoid problems by being wise in choosing who you spend your time with, or who you hang out with, or whose sort of advice you take. Or the last one there, if you want to stay out of trouble, be careful what you say. Just another proverb about avoiding trouble by thinking before you speak, or being careful about what you say. The Bible highly values wisdom. In fact, Proverbs says here, 4:7, getting wisdom is the most important thing you can do. Whatever else you get insight. Or in chapter 8, I am wisdom. I am better than jewels. Nothing you want can compare with me. Just stop and think about that for a second. If you think in your life, imagine if God came to you and said, like he did to Solomon, what would you like? I'll give you one thing you can have. What would you choose? What's the skill or the quality or the situation you would most desire? What the book of Proverbs says is it should be wisdom. Wisdom should be the thing we most desire, we most crave. Whether you find that easy to accept or not, I think the truth is the Bible clearly places importance on wisdom. It highly values wisdom. It's a key idea. In fact, it's such a key idea that one of the books of the Bible is purely devoted to it. And as we've said, actually, or as I've said, sorry, that a whole section of the Bible, section of the Old Testament, is considered to be concerned with wisdom, with the skill to live well. Now, it seems to me that as something that God values highly, as something that he devoted part of his word to, the pursuit of wisdom should be one of the things that marks out a follower of Jesus. Someone who pursues God should be pursuing wisdom. That should be one of the definitions. Wouldn't that be fantastic if people looked around and said, say what you want about the church, but they're really wise. I don't think people say that about us, do they? Not that I know of. It's certainly not reported very often. And I think there's a reason for that. I think historically, the church has often been considered primarily being concerned with what happens after you die. Sort of pie in the sky when you die kind of thing. That's what we do. We deal with death and what happens after it. We're not known necessarily for how we live our lives. And that has been one of the accusations, I think, for historically, it's certainly true with, if you know, look at the Marx and Engels who started the communist ideology, and other critics of the church through history have said the church is only concerned about what happens when you die. They don't care what happens now. And in fact, they will use heaven and hell to control what you do now, with threats of hell or promise of heaven, you know, to control how you live. But the existence in the Bible of books like Proverbs should be the antidote to that sort of thinking, because the book of Proverbs, like other books in the wisdom literature genre, are concerned purely with how we live now and what we do now and making our life count now. Faith is not just about, you know, what happens after you die. It is very much about what happens now, today, how we live now. I believe one of the key purposes God gave his people, the Old Testament law, was so that they would live well. And the other nations would look at them and say, they seem to make life work. I want to know more about the God behind this. And I believe wisdom is something that God has given for exactly the same purpose. Not just so that we may live well, but so that others may see us living well and be curious about how we manage it. Wisdom is a missional quality. Wisdom is a way of living that makes people say their life only makes sense if God exists. William Barclay, here's a William Barclay quote, which I think is good. Again, you might not agree with the strength of what he says, but I think there's definitely truth in it. He says, "The greatest converting influence of all is a life which is clearly and obviously possessed of a power which can cope with the human situation in all its problems, in all its tragedy, and in all its pain." I think he's making an argument there for being able to live well, to handle life well, is missional. It's an element of letting people know who God is and the difference he makes. There's a dodo here, extinct. I put this picture up because I thought, you know, in a sense, a foolish Christian should be like the dodo. There should be no such thing as a foolish Christian. We should be extinct, and yet we're not, as I've hinted earlier. We are not known necessarily for our wisdom. Many of us here may not feel like we are wise, that we can handle life and its challenges particularly well. We don't have the skills to live well. I certainly think that wisdom is what is kind of a hidden quality. It is not an immediately obvious thing. It's something that's often going on sort of behind the scenes, behind closed doors. And I think also, sort of as a result, people undervalue wisdom because it's not obvious. And I think that's true of us in the church as well. I think we undervalue wisdom. We overvalue other more external qualities. Certainly in my experiences in the ministry and in church life and so on, I know that when we're looking for people to fill a role, particularly a leadership role, there might be a long list of questions we have about what they're good at, or, you know, things like how old are they, because we're thinking about who they'll relate to and connect with, and, you know, what kind of things have they done before, and, you know, what can they bring to the church and all those things. But very rarely do we ask that question, I think, when we're looking for leaders, is, are they wise? Do they have wisdom? Is that a quality we see in this person? And that should be, I think, one of the first things on our list, because the Bible values it. The Bible values it highly. The truth is, we are unwise, we lack wisdom, because We've chosen it because we've chosen not to pursue wisdom. Yet God says, pursue wisdom. And we say, no, I'll pursue something. Wisdom is available to those who want it. But the irony is, I think, that if we lack wisdom, we don't see the value of wisdom in the first place. We don't realize that it's important. We don't see the need of it. In fact, things that we might consider wise can look like foolishness at times. And in fact, that's how it works often. I mean, when Paul wrote to the Corinthians, Liz read from a letter to Corinthians, he wrote to them in 1 Corinthians 1, 18, Paul goes on to say, the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. The idea that God can overturn the power of sin, can change the world through death, through the death of Jesus, that's foolishness to those who are perishing. But to those of us who are being saved, it's the power of God. And Paul goes on to say, the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom. The weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. And this is the problem, I think, is that wisdom sometimes looks like foolishness or weakness or caution or boredom. For example, here's something from Proverbs. I think this is some wisdom from Proverbs that might look like foolishness. Keep me from lying and let me be neither rich nor poor. So give me only as much food as I need. If I have more, I might say that I do not need you. But if I am poor, I might steal and bring disgrace on my God. So some of the wisdom in Proverbs is basically saying, just ask for enough, just enough, God. But that may seem like foolishness to people where we're conditioned, certainly in Western culture, to think you need to have more, always be getting more. You need whatever you have now is not enough. You need a bigger house, a better car, more money in the bank. And the pursuit of those things is what life is about. And we kind of believe this mindset that actually having just enough is worse than having too much. Yet the wisdom of Proverbs is having too much is worse than having just enough. Having just enough is wise because if you have too little, you're tempted to lie, cheat, and steal. If you have too much, you become complacent and arrogant and say, I don't need God. Yeah, this is exactly the kind of wisdom that I think people might not understand, might not get, may think, well, that's foolish, that's silly. Why would you only want just enough to get by? And this is the problem. It's a powerful thing. It can show people a better way to live. It's a way of sharing your faith. It's a way of bringing God's life to the world and community around you. But unless you realize that, wisdom just looks like foolishness or, being boring, or you just look like you're lucky if you're wise and that you don't have the same problems as everyone else. You have to be able to see past those things to wisdom that God promises is worth more than jewels or anything else. So having talked about what wisdom is and sort of establishing that actually is important, the final question is, how do we get wisdom then? As I've said, it's not immediately obvious when looking at it. It may not even be particularly attractive. How do we get it? Well, there's a few things here. There's a quote from Job here. Where then does wisdom come from? Where does understanding dwell? It is hidden from the eyes of every living thing, concealed even from the birds in the sky. Destruction and death say only a rumor of it has reached our ears. God understands the way to it, and he alone knows where it dwells. In Proverbs and the New Testament, there's words on wisdom here. At the bottom, Proverbs 9:10, to be wise, you must first have reverence for the Lord. If you know the Holy One, you have understanding. So the first key, I think, to wisdom, and I don't think it's exclusively a Christian thing. I think people who have other faiths or no faith can still be wise, because at the heart of wisdom is beginning with a position of saying, I don't know it all. I don't have all the answers. I don't understand everything. And I need to learn. I need to develop it. And in fact, James 1:5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. How many things do you think there are in the Bible where it says in black and white, ask for this and God will give it to you? Not many. Not many where it's kind of a black and white promise. And I kind of feel like if you ever encounter one of those in the Bible, you should be praying for it, regardless of whether you understand it or know or want it. You know, if it's something like says, look, if you ask for this, God will give it to you, then why wouldn't you ask for it kind of as a matter of course, a daily prayer? God, give me wisdom. Help me grow in wisdom. Teach me wisdom. We're told that if you do that, you will gain wisdom. So that's kind of the first place to start, a humility and coming before God and saying, I don't have wisdom and I want it. But it's not that easy, unfortunately. It's kind of we don't get supernaturally zapped with wisdom. It's a process. It takes time. And another thing we need to learn to do is reflect on life and reflect on our experiences. Sometimes we might think, you know, wisdom comes from experience. But that's not true. Wisdom comes from reflecting on your experiences, learning from your experiences. I'm sure we all know people who are very experienced, but yet still keep making the same mistakes, still keep stumbling over the same things or falling foul of the same things because they're not learning from their experiences. We are taught now, I think, for many of us in the workplace, this is kind of, the workplace has figured out that people can improve, you know. You sit down every year for an annual review or whatever, and they'll say, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? You know, how can we help you grow? All those kind of things. And I think, I wonder why the sort of, the secular workplace environment has worked out the value of these things, and yet we still lag behind in our own personal spiritual lives of sort of this discipline of asking these questions. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? How did that go? How could it have gone better? You know, where was God in that situation? I think getting into the habit of asking just those questions in reflection is one of the ways, in fact, the primary way to get to wisdom, to reflect on your experiences. There was a man who heard a story about an old hermit living in the mountains who was renowned for his wisdom and his holiness. So he seeks out this hermit and he says, oh, wise and reverend one, how did you become so holy? And the old man says, two words. And the man says, what are those words? And he said, right choices. And the man thought, oh, that makes sense. You grew in holiness because you made right choices. You did the right things to develop your holiness. That's good. How do you learn to choose rightly? And the old man said, one word. And he said, what's that word? He said, growth. He said, of course. You know, as you grow, you begin to realize how to make right choices. That makes sense. How do you grow? And the old man said, two words. He said, what are the two words? And the old man said, wrong choices. I think that is kind of how life works. But that's, in a sense, almost the grace of wisdom. Is that with wisdom, with this habit of reflecting and learning, even your mistakes and your failures become something on which God builds something amazing. If we can just have the courage and the patience to spend maybe just a few minutes asking those questions. What did I do well there? What did I do badly? How could it go better next time? Because mistakes can be a part of what God uses as we learn from them. The last thing I want to talk about briefly is community. When I was training for the ministry, one of the things one of my teachers used to say was, none of us are as wise as all of us. which was his way of saying, there is more wisdom in this room than there is when I'm by myself. That's a simple fact. When I'm by myself, I have some wisdom, maybe, not according to Ross. But when I'm part of a community, there's guaranteed to be more wisdom. So learning from other people, there's a Chinese proverb that's not in the book of Proverbs, but it could be, it's if you want to know the road ahead, ask those who are coming back. And I think these are the kind of things we can do as a community, is we look around and we see all this experience and this wisdom in the room, and we can say, I'm facing a situation and I know this person here has been through that situation and they have come through the other side. And I can learn from them. I can go to them and say, how did you handle this? What did you do? What helped you? What have you learned through your experiences that I can sort of apply in my own life? I think it's going to be very difficult. I don't know if it's a particularly male thing or whether it's because I'm an introvert or whatever. But say, for example, when Ruth says to me, go to the supermarket and buy some obscure, like, pickled gherkins or something like that. And I go into the supermarket and there's a guy there stacking the shelves, and the smart thing to do is to go to him and say, excuse me, where are the pickled gherkins? They say, aisle 7. Great, job done. I don't do that. I start at aisle 1 and I walk all the way up aisle 1 looking at everything on the shelf. Then aisle 2, and I sort of weave all the way up looking for pickled gherkins, which I sometimes find and sometimes don't. I don't know why I do that, but that's foolishness. And there are people around you who know the answers, and you think, no, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to try and find the pickle gherkins of life myself. And as this proverb goes here, stupid people always think they are right. Wise people listen to advice. I think that's absolutely true. And that's sort of an illustration of the fact that we need each other. And we need to have the humility to go to others and say, I can learn from you. Or, I've seen in you something that could help me. Also, I think we also need to have the courage, I suppose, to share our lives. Because there's no point in you having all these great experiences and all this great wisdom, and no one knows that you've done these things. No one knows that you've been through these situations and that there's this resource there to draw on. So it's difficult both ways. I think another thing to remember, as I've said, if you look at the book of Proverbs in chapter 8, one of the things that books of Proverbs talks about in chapter 8 is how the wisdom was there at creation. That wisdom is something that God placed into the world. And as a result, there can be wisdom found, as I've said, in other places, not just the church, not just the person sitting next to you this morning, but books and lessons can be learned from all kinds of places and people. Other cultures, not just Israel, had similar collections of wisdom as to the book of Proverbs. So it's something that can be found throughout the world. And I suppose my final piece of advice to you this morning would be to actually read the book of Proverbs. Read Proverbs itself. When I first made the decision that I was going to follow Jesus, I'd sort of grown up in the church. I was reasonably familiar with the Bible. But when I first made that decision, when I was sort of 15, 16, that I was going to, okay, I'm going to really follow Jesus, the first book I read was the book of Proverbs. Because I thought, well, if I've decided I'm going to follow Jesus, I want to know what that looks like, how to live as a follower of Jesus. And I knew the book of Proverbs was full of sort of practical wisdom. So that's the first book I read. And for this sermon, I pulled out my old Good News Bible that I had. And I looked at the book of Proverbs, the one that I'd read when I first became a Christian, seen sort of underlined passages. And I saw some of the things that had obviously struck me. And I thought, those things have stayed with me through my whole walk so far. Those things I read all those years ago, those lessons I've learned, they stuck with me. There is plenty of wisdom in the book of Proverbs, and it's right there to read. And sometimes we say, well, it's in the Old Testament, I'd rather not bother, or we don't quite understand things. You just get in there and sort of get your hands dirty and read it, because wisdom is something God has placed into creation for the benefit of all peoples. It seems to make sense to me that those who claim to walk closest with God should desire it and seek it. And then when we do so, it bears fruit in our lives, not just in our own ability to live well and handle life and navigate life, but also in our ability to reveal God to others through our lives. Let's pray. Father, thank you for wisdom, for the fact that you've given it to us as a gift, as a part of yourself. You've placed it in the world around us, and it's right there for us to develop if we desire it. So firstly, I ask that you might stir in us a desire for wisdom if we don't have it, a desire to be able to navigate life well and share that with others. And Father, I pray that you will hear those prayers for wisdom, that we'll take confidence and comfort from the promise you make that if we ask you, you give. But if we ask for wisdom, you'll give wisdom. Finally, Lord, I pray we'll have the humility not just to seek wisdom from you, but to seek it from others, other places around us. The humility to realize we're not perfect and we make mistakes, and when we make mistakes, to think about how we could have done it better. And to look at those who we see living well and say, how do you solve this problem? How did you manage this? What made the difference for you? Lord, give us those things, a desire and a humility, and that through that wisdom will come to us and we will be used by you to show the world around us that your ways are not foolishness, but the very power and life of God. Amen.